Thanks, Shireen and Lisa. My name is Anne Hoskins-Brown. I'm with the St. Christopher's Foundation for Children, and we were one of the foundations that really made some dramatic shifts as a result of the Convergence Partnership funding. And so today I'm going to talk to you about designing and implementing partnership-focused grant-making strategies to improve low-income food access, or food access in low-income communities. And this is really about the creation of our Farm to Families initiative. And I should start by saying that I don't have any disclosures to disclose. Because this represented such a major shift in how the foundation operates, it's really important to know some background information on the foundation. We were a hospital conversion foundation formed after the sale of St. Christopher's Hospital for Children. And unlike a lot of the typical conversion foundations, St. Christopher's Hospital was actually in bankruptcy proceedings at the time that we were formed, so we have a very small endowment. We've been doing place-based grant making focused on the 8 zip codes that surround the hospital, which is in North Philadelphia. And how we had always operated is we basically responded to unsolicited proposals with small grants in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. Our service area is also important to know a little bit about. We are in a very, very low-income section of Philadelphia. We have 319,000 residents across 8 zip codes. Out of those, 65% are minorities. Almost 50% have household incomes of less than $25,000. 30% are children of under 18, and out of those kids, almost 45% are either overweight or obese, and out of that, it's disproportionately affecting the Latino and Black community. At the time that we started the Farm to Families program, there were several different things that were bringing the issues of food insecurity and poverty to our attention. The first was a series of articles in the Philadelphia Inquirer talking about poverty and hunger in Pennsylvania's first congressional district. At the time that these articles came out, the congressional district was the second hungriest district in the United States. We've now improved our status to fourth. At the same time, the hospital, food insecurity issues were coming up at the hospital, and they did a study of the residents that used the hospital and found that almost 30% of those residents were worried that food was going to run out before they had money to pay for more. And out of those, almost 20% actually did run out of money before, or ran out of food before they had money to buy more. Families with children, because of lack of money for food, 11.3% of those families were reducing the size of their children's meals because they couldn't afford food. 10% had an adult in the household who didn't eat for an entire day. 6% had children who skipped one or more meals, and a small percentage, but an important percentage, 1.5% had children who didn't eat for the entire day. Another key thing that was coming out about the same time we were thinking about some of these issues was a program called Witnesses to Hunger. This was something that was done by the Drexel University College of Public Health, and it was a photo voice program where cameras were given to mothers with children to document their living circumstances, to document their food access issues. And these were some of the photos that came out of that. It was in an exhibit that's traveled around the country. It's been actually here in Washington fairly recently. This, to me, was one of the most moving images in that, in part because of the quote from the child, where she said, "Mom, can you take a picture? I feel happy right now. I want people to know that we're like everyone else. The same needs, the same wants. We want the same chances like everybody else." So the foundation responded by really shifting, in part as a reaction to the Convergence Partnership opportunity, to very proactive grant making. Our board started looking at our grant making history and went in through a strategic planning process. We became involved in the Delaware Valley Grantmakers Food Funders Affinity Group meetings. We did a lot of looking and a lot of listening and a lot of talking to people within the community to find out what was needed. And what we ended up doing is switching to a much more strategic approach to grant making. Our goals became to really improve health for families by increasing access to fresh, healthy foods. We wanted to improve their understanding of about why and how to eat healthy foods. And with the Convergence Partnership opportunity, we were looking to catalyze new and additional coordinated funding and to create effective multi-field partnerships. The Farm to Families model was the result of all of this work, and it's a food access and nutrition education initiative with the initial funding from the Convergence Partnership, matching funding from our own funds. It contains three key components. The first is a community-supported agriculture model, similar to community-supported agriculture. That's a food distribution program. Because the area that we serve is considered typically a food desert, we were looking to bring fresh, healthy foods into that neighborhood. So we have a market-based solution to increase food access that's providing $10 to $15 boxes of produce. People can pay for them via cash, credit, debit, SNAP, or farmers market nutrition voucher programs. It's all sustainably locally grown food. Philadelphia is surrounded by Lancaster County, which is a lot of farms in the area. And the food is delivered right into their neighborhoods. We're partnering with community-based organizations to do this and get the food into the neighborhoods. Also includes a nutrition education component, wraparound nutrition education at the time the folks are coming to pick up their boxes, and policy change as a third prong, looking at increasing access by making food more affordable and available. In our first year, we had numerous community partners. We had partners in the project leadership and management through different consulting teams. We had a network of partners bringing the food into the neighborhood. As the graphic illustrates, the food starts with the farmers, went through the Common Market, which is a food aggregator program. The Share Food program then boxed up the food, got it out to the neighborhood organizations. Women's Community Revitalization Project and Girard College were two of our first partners on the distribution sites. Neighborhood Bike Works then had a group of kids who actually biked the food to people who couldn't get out of their house and ultimately getting it to the families. We had nutrition education at each of the distribution sites that was conducted by the Health Promotion Council, and we contracted with the Food Trust to do some policy change work. In that first year, one of the things that we really focused on was intensive evaluation. OMG Center for Collaborative Learning helped us to compile resources of surveys of clients to find out the things that people liked about the program, the things that they didn't like about the program, what some of the barriers were. They did a lot of data collection from the distribution sites. The reinvestment fund helped us to create some mapping to help guide our future site selection. Students that were master's candidates in city and regional planning helped us to create a strategic plan looking at how the program would work going forward. And then the William Penn Foundation actually helped us to fund a consultant to create a business plan so that ultimately the program can be self-sustaining. Some of the lessons that we learned and the key recommendations from all of this evaluation were that we needed to centralize the distribution. They felt like our distribution process was far too linear. They suggested that we refine the infrastructure, that we enhance our marketing and outreach to really recruit and retain families with children. And also they recommended that we expand our box offerings to give the customers a lot more variety, a lot more choices, and basically more bang for the buck in the food program. So some of the changes that we've been making in our second year, we're now in the second year, we've centralized the food purchasing, packaging, and delivery at Share. That actually has given us some new alternatives for food sourcing. We're now able to buy from the regional produce hubs. We're able to go to the farmers auctions because of Share. We've been able to increase our a la carte menu options so that aside from the boxes, people have some choice in what they get. So we're able to offer things like avocados and plantains and some food that is not locally grown through a a la carte option. We're also including things like meat products, eggs, things like that. And then we were able to create a customized data collection tool that we're in the final testing phases of now. In the food box and program marketing changes, based on the consumer feedback that we got, we've really increased the diversity of the items in the boxes. Like I mentioned before, we're including more conventional items in the boxes. We're including, in the winter, people got really tired of root vegetables because that's what's grown in Pennsylvania in the winter. So we're adding conventional items in the boxes in the winter to have more of a variety. And again, adding the a la carte items. Based on sales, initially we had three different box levels, a $5, $10, and $15. $5 box didn't sell, we've eliminated that. And we've really focused distribution within a community-based organizations that have built-in constituencies. We're also looking at adding a kitchen staples box and including some potted herbs down the line. The distribution sites, the map on the left is actually the map that was done by the reinvestment fund, and the hospital supplied us with information on the residences of the kids who were going to the hospital through their ambulatory pediatrics. So we mapped that out and used that as a guide to select additional distribution sites. So over the past year, we've gone from two initial sites to a total of 8 sites. We have 6 public sites and 2 that are private and only open to their own clients. The other thing that's emerging that we feel like is really innovative and we're really excited about is strengthened partnerships with doctors and healthcare. We're really using the physicians as referral sources. We've started developing something called FreshRx, where the doctors at St. Christopher's Hospital are actually writing prescriptions to the Farm to Families program to their kids who are in their GROW clinic, which is for kids with failure to thrive, the Healthy Lifestyles program, and also their ambulatory pediatrics program. The 11th Street Family Health Center, which is part of Drexel University, is doing the same thing. So we're really excited about that. And the other piece that's emerging this year is the food trust policy changes. We're really looking at potentially impactful policy changes, particularly expansion of the WIC program. We can take the farmers market nutrition voucher for seniors, but not for WIC. So we're looking at that. We're looking at guidelines to make it easier to offer samples at farm stands and things like that. And we're also looking at increasing the advocacy within the community through a North Philadelphia Food Policy Coalition and a Train the Trainer program. Basically, what we found is that with a foundation as a partner, we can do things a little bit differently. We can bring in a macro level vision where we're working with a broader scale of organizations. We can conduct high level needs assessments. And we also can provide the ability to experiment that maybe some of the other kinds of the community-based organizations can't afford to experiment. We can. We've been able to take on in-depth evaluation. And most importantly, we've been able to foster collaboration among the really diverse organizations to achieve common goals. So, thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. Great job.
Great, thanks to our wonderful panelists. I feel like I learned so much, even though I know some of the work that's going on. It's great to hear it in this comprehensive way. I wanted to just open up the floor right now. We have about 15 minutes for question and answer or any comments anyone wants to make.
We still have a very close relationship with the hospital. We actually manage about 30 donor-designated funds for the hospital, so we have very close collaboration on an ongoing basis. And our service areas overlap, so what we wanted to do is really make sure that we were serving the families with children, and one of the ways that we saw to do that was to get the addresses of the kids who were using the hospital for their primary care. So there are about 40,000 children every year that are seen in the hospital for primary care on an outpatient basis. So we gathered that data, it was all de-identified, and then the reinvestment fund mapped it. And then we started looking for community-based organizations that were located close to where the concentrations of those kids lived. One of the things we actually found that was interesting was that in a lot of the areas where there was the most intensive number of kids, there weren't very many community-based organizations that we could use as partners. That was a real struggle and really highlights the lack of resources in some of those areas.
So these dots that we're seeing here, they're just purely number of kids who are making more than
No, there is purely number of kits. So the bigger the dot, the more the kits. And you can see they really kind of, the hospital is, there's this big patch here in the middle, and you can really see that the kits concentrate around the hospital.
Great, thank you.
Hi, I'm working in an area that has a fair amount of foundation funding, but my impression is that the foundation haven't really yet made a move towards policy systems and environmental change. They aren't embracing convergence thinking, innovation kind of things at this point. And I guess from a funder standpoint, can you offer any insight to how a potential grantee, I mean, obviously it's self-serving for me to go to them and say, oh, I think you should be funding this. But can you talk about how that conversation might go?
Sure. That's not an uncommon phenomenon, but I do think there are the light bulbs going off within a lot more foundations, and I think that peer-to-peer education can really be effective sometimes, funder to funder. One thing that we did actually a few years ago in the Pacific Northwest, almost every state or region has an affinity group. Like in our region, it's Grantmakers of Oregon, Southwest Washington. I don't know if you're familiar with the Alliance for Justice. They're based in D.C., but they publish some terrific resources about funding advocacy. And they're really helping educate funders about it. Number one, you're not going to lose your tax status if you fund advocacy. Number two, it's really going to help you achieve your mission more than on a program-by-program basis. So we brought someone from Alliance for Justice out to really do sort of a half-day workshop for a number of funders about the ins and outs of funding advocacy. It's something that occurs gradually. Certainly a few of the funders that contributed to our fund, our pooled fund, this was sort of a testing the waters sort of grant for them. Gave them, since the funding was going through us, it kind of gave them a little bit of safety in terms of being distant from it. But we're hoping to really shift more funders into funding advocacy because we were kind of out there alone for a while, but I think a lot more are starting to realize that's how you get the biggest impact.
I would also just say, if you can find even sort of one champion who's a staff member or a board member at one of the foundations to spread the word about the need for policy change, I think that's really, really helpful because, as Chris described, the funding community is often kind of a small community in areas and everybody knows each other. So if you can get one person on your side, I think that could be really important. And then the other thing is, I think with our foundation, our board members, although they had really no experience or even understood what policy was in terms of nutrition and physical activity, they were very involved in politics. And involved, in the state Democratic Party and local political races. And so we were able to take their interest in politics and kind of expand it and show them how, politics and policy are related and how policy could be integrated into the grant.
I'd just like to just to add to that because we heard of that was an issue with a lot of the folks that were interested in applying for the Innovation Fund, the Convergence Innovation Fund. And what we told them to do was take the RFP and the information on the website, the fact that these national major health and non-health foundations are really feel that these are the strategies that are really going to make a difference for health and equity across the nation, and really try to show and share that with the potential champion or the champion you're trying to foster, or even the president, the board, whatever information you can, whatever relationships that you do have, try to work that angle, because many of the partners found that that was useful, that just having the support and backing of these larger foundations saying these were effective and good strategies helped them move to the next level. In the back.
So I work for a health foundation in Missouri, and through our involvement with social innovation funds federally on the national level, we had that same discussion with our board, which has been pretty much direct services oriented and really not sure how much to put into policy, but we find we have more successful organizations who are working at that intersection of most foundations are trying to get information from the community, and sometimes they do a very poor job of it, sometimes they do a good job of it, so take advantage of that. My question has to do with sustainability of a lot of these projects over time. From a funder's perspective, it's 2-year funding, it's over. What is your confidence level of these projects sustaining themselves? And having that match money certainly helps, I'm sure, but
For our Farm to Families initiative, that was part of the business plan that actually William Penn Foundation supported us with. Pieces of it are not ever going to be self-sustaining, so the nutrition education and the policy work is probably not going to be self-sustaining, but the food access initiative itself actually is, and we have a model, it'll be several more years, but part of it's just through economies of scale, that as the program builds and there's more and more of the food that's being brought into the community, the distribution sites and the primary food hub person, they're adding small amounts onto the cost of the boxes so that ultimately it should start paying for itself. And that was one of the things we were really looking at, too, and that our board was really looking closely at.
Yeah, sure. So a good example of how we're trying to create sustainability is in our work with the Los Angeles County Office of Ed. So they already had funds from the Public Health Department to work on practice changes. But we knew that practice changes only go so far. So for instance, if you have a principal at a high school and they say, okay, we're going to stop having vending machines, that's great and it makes a big difference. But let's say a new principal comes in, which seems to happen almost every year, every other year, and that principal's like, hey, I want to make a bunch of extra money, I'm going to put vending machines back in. So we knew that you needed to have policy in place to make these changes business as usual. And so that's what we're trying to do in that project with either school level or district level policy that says, you must have a food policy that talks about what kinds of foods could be brought in for parties or celebrations, or you must have a policy that says we're going to have a certain number of hours of a physical education specialist for our elementary classes. So that policy will hopefully make these practices business as usual, and it won't matter who's in charge or who's making the decisions, because it just becomes how the school runs.
Just want to add, it's a really good question, because sustainability is often it's one of the most difficult issues in the philanthropic sector, I'd say. But I kind of, with this initiative, I'd view it as it's at least three different levels. There's project sustainability, there's organizational sustainability, and there's movement sustainability. Quite frankly, I'm most interested in the sustainability of the movement. On a project-by-project basis, there are going to be some organizations that say those who are working on the Portland Plan. Once the Portland Plan is adopted and implemented, there's no need to continue to advocate on it. You can say, well, you can have some sort of watchdog role to make sure it's being properly implemented, but that's a much lower resource sort of conversation. In terms of organizational sustainability, one of the roles we try to play, since we're not a very large foundation, is always to open doors to other funders. Specifically larger funders, and nominate them for grants with other funders. In addition, 4 of our 7 of our innovation fund grantees have earned grants from Northwest Health Foundation through other funding vehicles we have. But in terms of the sustainability of the movement, that's where we're really most interested, and that's, quite frankly, we're putting a lot of hope in the outcome of the community transformation grant that Multnomah County Health Department had submitted. Unfortunately, it was that classic approved but not funded, which you just want to strangle some. I don't know who ever came up with that phrase, but it was not funded. So we are trying to look for ways to keep the healthy eating, active living movement inclusive and diverse and thriving through other venues. And that's going to require a lot more bridge building with other funders who have not really historically gotten into this topic area.
And on the foundation sustainability, so one of the main tenets or goals of the Innovation Fund was to shift the way that foundations did their grant making. And what we're seeing as sort of interim measures that that's happening is that the tenets and the strategies and values of the Convergence Innovation Fund are being used now within the Innovation Fund partner foundations in other portfolios or within their strategic planning processes. So it's becoming much more of a fabric of the types and ways in which they do their work at the foundation than it has ever before. So in our eyes, that's a way of sustaining the types of work we want to see happen. I think we are the National Convergence Partnership. While we want to see the success of the individual projects, we want to see more of the foundation shifts, and that foundation shift is the sustainability that we can see on the ground ultimately. But I'll share a couple of other examples of groups that aren't here. For example, on a project, the sustainability of a project, Mary Black Foundation in South Carolina, they had built a collaborative and had done some work together. That collaborative then when the Health and Human Services funding was available around fresh food financing, they were very, very well positioned because they had created these new relationships to go in and apply for that funding, and they received $500,000 for that funding to both extend some of their work and then create a food hub. And so that's one of a number of examples of ways in which they've leveraged grant government funding or other grant funding and to move their efforts forward. And I'll just want to mention one other example of something one of the local foundations is doing. The Zilber Family Foundation in Milwaukee has hired a consultant to work not with individual grantees, but collectively with their group of grantees to help them identify create a sustainability plan. And so it doesn't become where they feel like they're competing with one another. It's a transparent process where they're understanding where funding, where there's opportunities, how they can collaborate, where some makes sense for some to take a lead and not, in order to sustain the movement versus just sustaining the individual projects. Any other questions? I feel like there was one in the front here.
Start. I'd say there's several strategies. Number one, I started at the Northwest Health Foundation in 2005. Almost all of our board members have turned over since then, and we've been very intentional about who we recruit to our board. And so we recruit board members who are going to appreciate and embrace that policy and environmental change strategy, as well as those who are going to embrace our equity focus. That said, it is a constant re-education because, I mean, board members are human beings too, and board members see the dramatic rise in direct services, and you know, we'll have one who comes in from the field and said, I had spent all weekend at a migrant health clinic, oh my God, we've got to pour money into that. And, you know, on one hand you say, well, how do you say no to that? But then on the other hand, we have to sit down and say, well, we could put all of our grants into safety net provision of direct services. We would never get ahead of the curve by doing that, and it can seem sort of heartless in a way. But it's we also have to remind our board members we're not the only philanthropic game in town, and there are a lot of other foundations who do see their role as funding those direct services. We have a luxury in a way of going upstream and trying to address those systemic factors.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the same. It is a constant process and just constant reminders. And I can have one board meeting and get, you know, policy-oriented grants approved, but the next board meeting I have to start out with the rationale again of why we're not doing direct services and we're not funding nutrition education for kids, and that's it. So I think it's being prepared to keep that going. And also, making a big deal of your successes and making sure the board really understands that and understands what the policy successes mean for the community.
Thank you.
In the front.
So, in light of some of the things that you've shared in dealing with the coalition building aspect of things, we have been funded by the CDC to do the community transformation grant, which is capacity building, which is very similar to some of the things I've seen here. Well, in my natural self, I want to invite everyone and their mother to the meeting. And so now everybody and their mom come to this meeting on November 10th, and I'm scared out of my Now I've got to say, okay, here's the real deal. We're looking at policy, we're looking at environment, and we're looking at, and with a health education background myself, we want to do that direct thing. So what guidance do you have to share? Number one thing we were looking at is to not fund. We're going to have a bidding process, and we're going to go through all that to do some of the work. And we're also going to look at community engagement activities, but to engage the community around these issues, yeah, too, on policy, environment, and all of those things, because my past experience is going to be a challenge, because you usually come out for education, for promotion of health. So I was just wondering if y'all had any experiences or guidance to share as I prepare for this meeting. My supervisor has already said you have a big gamut of people that you've invited, and now we're all over the place. But I'm trying to be inclusive,
right.
But now I see the need to kind of narrow the focus and help people see where they belong in this process.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I think this could be used, while it's a little scary that people are coming from all areas, you know, from very different perspectives, it's also an educational opportunity for them to see that there is funding in this new arena where there wasn't necessarily before, and get them to see them, how do they fit into this new framework, and how do they then push themselves a little closer to the edge, and maybe for them they can't push far enough to be eligible. And I think what you want to do is be really clear, as clear as you can be, about these definitions of things. And I think we've struggled with that in the Convergence Partnership, and I think we've had some lessons learned from our first round of these funding, where we want to be a little bit. We want to keep the expansive nature of it so that local groups can be able to, you know, shape their programs. But we want to be more specific about what expectations we have. And that, I think, can be best done through examples. And so defining what you mean by policy and environmental change the best way you can, which will likely still be a little too broad for some people, and then actually giving people examples of what are the types of policy changes that you would like to see or has happened in your community that others will be familiar with that you would define as policy change, what you would define as environmental change, what constitutes your definition of promoting equity, and what does that look like? And I think being as clear as possible. And then I think the third thing might be to, as Chris said, that you're making sure that they know you're not the only philanthropic partner in town, and identifying ahead of time and having some conversations with those other partners that do fund that kind of more direct services to say, you know, we're basically going to let folks know in this large room that they might go to you or be turned to you for this kind of work. Chris or Ann, anyone?
That was a great point. The only other thing I would suggest is hire a really good facilitator. I think we both use Diana Bianco for a different kind. I mean, we have one person who we typically hire to do facilitation. She is worth her weight in gold. I mean, she makes sure everyone in the room feels like they've been heard and appreciated, and yet she makes everything run on time, which brings people to a consensus decision by the end of the meeting. I am constantly in awe of her, and she's worth every penny she charges us. So if you know someone who fits that bill, don't scrimp.
I have one other suggestion, that if you have some policy priorities, maybe they were laid out in your CCG grant, but, you know, if you can, rather than just sort of opening it up to the group that anything goes, present the group with a menu of your priorities, and then let the group identify priorities among those priorities or split into subcommittees to address the priorities. But there's nothing wrong with having a menu and then letting folks choose what they would like to work on from that menu.
That's kind of
kind of how we've come to our policy priorities is we really work to develop a great long list of policy changes that we thought that would be helpful, and then we narrowed that down much smaller, looking at priorities and then also what we thought we were going to be most likely to accomplish. We do all of our grant making now through RFP, and one of the things that we're looking at with the community-based organizations in particular is their ability to, that they have a large constituency that then they have connections to that they can help move into an advocacy profile.
Good luck with that presentation.